Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. With the New Zealand International Film Festival upon us once again, it's a great opportunity to slump back into a comfy cinema chair and escape from reality for a while. However, for the subjects of Brian March's latest documentary, There Once Was an Island, there's no escaping reality. Their tiny island off Papua New Guinea is slowly disappearing. Sea level rises mean their traditional food sources are dying from salt contamination, and their villages are increasingly prone to flooding. It's the sort of irrefutable evidence of climate change you'd like every denier to witness firsthand, if it didn't mean sending them off to an otherwise beautiful tropical island for a few months. Brian March spent not just months, but years putting this documentary together, and she joins us now. Thank you so much for coming here.
Kia ora.
What a wonderful documentary, beautifully shot and a timely tale. Let's be clear, is it climate change that's causing this island to sink into the sea, or is it erosion, or is it a mixture of all the factors?
I think it's a mixture of all things. Sea level rise is one of the factors that is causing the islanders to experience the erosion that we're seeing on the island, but it's only one of the many things that are happening. So there are mismanagement with sea walls that create sand to be washed back from the sea.
Because they're building sea walls that they think are protecting themselves, but in fact they're not. They're actually in the long term doing more damage.
That's right. And then there's overpopulation of the island itself. And so, I mean, what we came to realise when we were making the film is that sea level rise is going to be an increasing problem. And with that, there needs to be more money for adaptation. And so the islanders could potentially live there for longer if there was the funding and resources to do that. But without the funding and resources, they will have to move off the island. So in that sense, the sea level rise will be the thing that pushes them away because there's no resources to support them. But at the moment, there are a combination of things that are creating the problems on the island.
But as a society, they're pretty much off the radar for most people, aren't they? I mean, most people who see your film won't have heard of Taku before going to the film.
No one would. I mean, like, well, they might have heard about the publicity from the film because we've been working on it for so long, but yeah, I mean, this is such a remote atoll. I mean, I hadn't heard about it either, and the only reason why I did is because an ethnomusicologist, Richard Moyle, who studies at Auckland, well, he used to work at Auckland University, he'd been studying the culture, because the other really interesting thing about this island is that the Polynesian group of people, they still practice their traditional religion, and that's quite unique. You know, most of Polynesia is, you know, converted to Christianity or practice Christianity. So Richard had been studying the music, which is very interesting there too. I mean, one really interesting thing is that they will sing for like 12 hours on end and dance and do these amazing things. And so he'd been going there, and I'd read about his work, and he mentioned about how the island was impacted by rising sea levels and how that this was a problem for them. And one thing that makes them particularly vulnerable is that they're only 1 meter above, the island is only 1 meter above mean sea level. So I thought to myself, well, I mean, this island is really going to be impacted. I mean, they don't have anything supporting them.
The interesting thing is that even on the other island, Garden Island, it's known as, where they grow their giant taro, you see that the sea level rises, which presumably is not man-made because it's uninhabited, isn't it, this island? Is getting the salt tables
rising,
and it's killing these giant taro that have been growing there for presumably hundreds of years.
Yeah, you literally see that, don't you, in the film. And in the second trip that we made to the island, we made two trips. The first trip, the Taku Islanders said that they really felt they needed more research on the island to understand what was happening. And we agreed, because not many research had been made in this area of the Pacific, and yet there'd been a lot of media coverage about it. And we're like, well, you know, we really need to find out really what's going on here. So the scientists came, two scientists, John Hunter and Scott Smithers, came the second time around.
They were Australians, were they?
Both of them were Australian. Yeah, and they had a look at the gardens on Taku, the garden island, and they could see this salt water bubbling up, and they suggested ways in which the gardeners could change the way that they grew the taro. But, you know, they also said that with sea level rise predicted to rise between 50 to 100 centimetres in the coming century, that is really going to impact those gardens continually.
That sort of thing of the passage of time is quite key to your film, isn't it? You had to go back second time. It wouldn't have been the same story if you'd only gone once.
No, yeah. I mean, I guess with a documentary, this is always a challenging thing about making films, particularly documentary, because, you know, like when you're writing a narrative, you have the luxury of being able to create this structure and this story and knowing kind of what you can get because you're in control. Whereas when you're making a documentary, you don't have that control. So when we went the first time, it was kind of a challenge for me as a filmmaker because not much happens on an island, actually. And you're there, you're sort of filming a bit and you're like, oh, okay, what do I film now? So I think that I really needed to, you know, wait to get the scientists to come and sort of anticipate things to create the story structure. And then, as you know, there is a devastating flood that occurs in the film.
I was going to say you were lucky enough, in inverted quotes, to have been there during that flood to film the devastation, to film the school being wiped out. I don't think we're ruining too much of the movie's plot here, are we?
Yeah, you guys have to come and watch the film.
You see this there. I suppose in a way that you would have been quite thankful in a documentary sense that you happened to be there while that happened. It didn't happen a week after you'd left or something.
It's what filmmakers call documentary gold or something.
Yes.
It's horrible because it's not a nice thing that happened. And yeah, as you say, the flood destroyed over half the houses on the island, which is extreme. And then the weirdest thing is that it happened on my birthday. And I was sort of like just going, oh my gosh, you know, this is kind of what we need for the film, but we don't want anyone to have this kind of devastation. But one thing that was really fortuitous about the whole thing is that it was like a 50-year flood, and the scientists had been collecting all this data for like 2 weeks before it happened. And then they documented the whole flood, and then they took more data afterwards. And now they're making a report that they, you know, are going to share with the scientific community and also make something specific for the islanders themselves. And I think, I mean, that was just amazing that we could be there at that moment and really record that. I mean, when else do you get to do that? It's quite amazing.
It must be frustrating for you when you switch on the TV then and see people like, you know, John Boscawen or Rodney Hyde of ACT or the Federated Farmers saying, ah, look, climate change is not happening.
Well, yeah, I mean, I definitely can see that climate change is happening, and I really hope that my film can show that to people. But one thing that I do get really frustrated about is the way that the media deals with climate change. I feel that often they will use examples of things that aren't actually to do with climate change and use them in the argument to make people care. Now, I mean, I'm glad that, you know, obviously the media is taking that on board and wanting to make people feel concerned about the environment. But what I've noticed, particularly with the subject of sinking islands, is that often there's a lot of incorrect information out there. I mean, like Tuvalu, for example, I mean, half of that island is sinking because of a tectonic plate. Now, I mean, I'm not saying that island isn't being impacted by climate change, but I'm saying that often in the media that things have become very black and white and no one's really dealt with the grey areas. And I think that this is something different about what our film attempted to do, because when the scientists came there, they were saying, well, look, here's an issue here that could be improved, you know, and like an island is made up of sand, and you know, sand moves around. So sometimes you'll see one coastal area retreat, and another area, you know, will actually develop more of a coast on that side. So things are always moving around, and it's so complicated, and it's not as simple as we sometimes display it in the media. But I think even though they were saying, okay, this and this might not all be to do with rising sea levels, when it came down to it, they said, look, you know, with sea level rise, there's going to be increased flooding events. Now, we can, you know, deal with that by like changing the way that we build the seawalls. We can deal with that by building houses that are closer inland. But when it comes down to it, none of the Pacific has the money and the resources to do that. So to me, what I learned was that adaptation is a huge issue in the Pacific. And then there's the question of if we can't, you know, fund and support adaptation, then relocation is going to be on the cards for a lot of people. And I feel that that's something that not many people are talking about.
It's hard to see how the government in Bougainville is looking at funding the relocation of some of these people from the island to the mainland. I'm presuming that these people on the island, they're not paying a lot of tax, for example. I'm presuming that the government of Bougainville does not have a lot of money. It's hard to see that how they can get the resources to adapt. But there's a very strong character in the documentary who towards the end says, what we've got to do is we've got to start doing stuff ourselves. And if people see us doing the best we can ourselves, they might help us.
Yeah, I mean, I think this community is a very inspiring people. They're not people that just go, oh, woe is me. You know, they get up and make do what they the best they can in their situation. They don't pay taxes. And the Bougainville, which is the island that's considered mainland and that's also part of Papua New Guinea, has just come out of a 10-year civil war that you guys all probably know about. So, I mean, moving to that island is so problematic because there's already a lot of issues over land and it's very, very sensitive. So, yeah, I mean, it's so complicated and sometimes you're going, oh, God. But I actually think, you know, I think as New Zealand and Australia, we do have a responsibility to the Pacific and other developed nations. And I think really if there should be more funding coming from somewhere, it should be from us.
I thought just as a one final note, it was very interesting to see in the documentary that the islanders all live they share all their resources, they all go out fishing, they chuck all the fish into a big pile, and they all take an equal share out. It's an idyllic society on a beautiful island, and I guess you were very privileged to spend the time that you did there.
Yeah, well, it's an egalitarian society, so that was a pretty amazing thing to witness. And yeah, I mean, if you go on the website at www.thereoncewasanisland.com, you can check out my blog, and there's some really hilarious stories because this island has no electricity, no sewage system, no commerce. And so, I mean, there was some really quite funny things that happened while we were filming there, and you know, had to like generate our cameras with solar panels and everything. It was a bit of an adventure, that's for sure.
Look, that's fantastic. But the film is travelling around the country, starting in Auckland, moving down. I've seen it. I recommend it. Some beautiful photography and some really inspiring story. Well done. Congratulations. All the details are at nzff.co.nz. Brian March, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
That's Brian March. Coming up after the break, we meet some AMP scholarship hopefuls and we talk to Julia Deans.